Welcome to Ideasphere with the director of Citizens Congress 2014, William Ostrander.
The Citizens Congress will be held in San Luis Obispo, California from June 2nd to the 5th. We'll cover topics from legislation versus an amendment to messaging to litmus tests for candidates to rules the IRS, FEC, and SEC can invoke.
In 2010, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the First Amendment prohibits the government from restricting political donations, that is, so long as the money is independent from any political party. Money and free speech became synonymous. Further ruling by the Supreme Court has broadened the original decision, and according to the bipartisan group Citizens Congress 2014, corporate business organizations have focused billions of dollars to organize and lobby for legislation that favors their special interests. Hello, I'm Guy Rothbun. Welcome to Ideasphere, a platform for today's voices, with Director of Citizens Congress, William Ostrander. Their mission statement posted on their website says, "They're striving independently to remove the corrupting influence of money in the political system." Mr. Ostrander joins me for this program. Thanks for taking this time.
Oh, thanks for having me on the show, Guy.
As I read your work and move to amend others like that, I'm thinking that, wait a minute, it's been decided by the Supreme Court to allow corporations an equal vote or how much money is allowed into a campaign by any individual or corporation. So how do you change the Supreme Court ruling?
Well, that's the first misconception about what I'm doing. Number one, that typical interpretation of Citizens United ruling is kind of the emotional interpretation of that ruling. What the Supreme Court actually said in the Citizens United ruling, and many of the rulings that they're making, which are, you know, for example, the McCutcheon ruling and others, the Supreme Court is looking at general treasury funds from a corporation or from a union as being free speech. And as free speech, they cannot coordinate with the candidates themselves or with the campaigns themselves. Wink, wink, they can't, you know. But they are allowed to have independent expenditures. And independent expenditures basically means that, let's say that you're running for office. If I wanted to get on the bandwagon and say, I think Guy Rothbun has the best candidacy out there and he's for all the right reasons, you know, I can express myself as an individual or if I'm a corporation using my general treasury funds, or if I'm a union, you know, I can do that so long as I don't call up your campaign manager or you yourself and say, hey, I'm going to run this ad. What do you think about it? So what the court did was try to reinforce what they felt was the rights of free speech. That's something that's been contested over many different court cases, including the seminal Buckley versus Vallejo course the Supreme Court had in 1976, where they recognized that the First Amendment has a role in this. Unfortunately, most of law is about a question of semantics and how you interpret it. And the court sort of looked at that free speech right as something that was important and still didn't have any quid pro quo corruption or appearance of corruption, because if the person was spending their own money to stand up on a soapbox and say why they agreed with this, and as long as you're not interfering with the campaign, they should have the right to do that. Unfortunately, that's incredibly naive, because what that suggests is that nobody is actually going to bend the rules, nobody is going to coordinate with another campaign, and it's exceedingly difficult to carry out any kind of an investigation that this person did collude with their campaign manager or their friend or the campaign. Therein lies the rub. The Supreme Court is sort of suggesting that there is no collusion, when we have immeasurable number of examples historically of the collusion that goes on. Whether that collusion might have been as the quid pro quo corruption of a paper bag full of cash, or whether there's a deal in the works, or whether there's a new house bought, or whether there's just the dependent corruption that comes when a candidate needs money for an election. And then they go and they are able to get money, and that usually creates a certain obligation or sense of favor, even if it's not direct. That would be called the appearance of corruption. And the Supreme Court is really completely looking the other way on that, and it's absurd.
How about the individuals of Leonard Pitt's recent column? And he titled it, "Wake Up, People." The reason he did that is because he feels like most people see this kind of information as, let's go on with our business. So is the public distracted?
Well, I don't know if it's a question of distraction, although there is that part of it as well. In large measure, I think that we have not done well on this issue of messaging to people to help them make the nexus between the legislative decisions that are made in Washington and their daily lives, because it just seems like such arcane information or arcane subject matter, and they don't really see the outcomes of that, or they don't feel them in the same way that you'd say, let's say you invoke some new law about immigration and people are pulling people over on the streets, you'd get that, you'd feel that every day. But let's say they choose to forest in areas which the environmental impact report would say, hey, that's not a good idea. Most people won't feel that. Or if they have legislation that benefits maybe some dirty burning of coal or some other fossil fuels issue, people won't sense that their air is getting dirtier immediately. They don't see that. When they look at tax burdens and so forth, they don't necessarily see trends. And of course, most people that are working with legislators and passing legislation that may not be to our favor are incredibly good at spinning it in such a way that it sounds like it's actually for our benefit. And we don't have enough time and we don't have enough measurements in our daily lives to sort of recognize how that's affecting us. And the accumulated effect over the years is huge. And that's why Leonard Pitts is saying, wake up, people. We have 40 years of empirical data that has shown how tremendous campaign contributions have affected legislative outcomes. Those legislative outcomes have been bad for the other 99%, to use that number that's been bandied about a lot.
What is it that the individual can do then? I bring this up because as a citizen, I'm thinking the law of the land is established by the Supreme Court.
Well, we can do two things. One, we could override the Supreme Court's decision by creating an amendment to the Constitution, which is exceedingly difficult to do. It's a very high bar. To pass an amendment to the Constitution requires 2/3 of both houses of legislators, as well as 3/4 of the states, to ratify that this amendment, in fact, be a part of the Constitution. That's an exceedingly high bar to do, especially in today's world of polarity in partisan politics. Moreover, people need to put that into perspective. There's been approximately 11,600 constitutional amendments proposed to the Constitution in our 230-some-year history. And out of that 11,000, close to 600 amendments, we've had 27 that have passed. 10 are part of the Bill of Rights. 3 of them were sort of passed, forced on the Southern legislators. One of them has been repealed. So when you think about it, we have maybe 16 amendments that have been passed as a result of the people realizing that their governance needs a course correction. But that doesn't mean that it's impossible, because this is a huge issue. So an amendment is definitely one way. The other way is not necessarily hitting the Supreme Court decision straight on. You can, and there is a lot of latitude to create legislation, change rulemaking in the SEC, the Security Exchange Commission, the Federal Election Commission, and the Internal Revenue Service that can change things that don't have anything to do with First Rights Amendments, free speech issues that the Supreme Court has. There's also legislative options. So there are plenty of things that we can do without hitting that straight on. And it's been told to me that the Constitution has powers that the Congress has the ability to overturn a Supreme Court's decision. But there are very few people that want to try it and test that. Part of your question was, what can people do? There's a lot you can do. First of all, what we've decided to do in San Luis Obispo is we've decided to hold what we're calling the Citizens Congress. And the Citizens Congress is the very first national gathering of the leading voices on campaign finance reform. And we're becoming a facilitator for that event. So what we're doing is we're inviting academics, former Secretary of Labor, Professor Robert Reich from Berkeley, Professor Lawrence Lessig from Harvard, who's also written a number of books and had a PowerPoint presentation that's on the TED Talks, which is excellent. He's written a book called Represent Us, which talks about this problem. Trevor Potter, who's a former chairman of the FEC, a constitutional scholar. He was the chief legal counsel for the campaigns of John McCain. He was also the chief legal counsel for the Stephen Colbert Super PAC Fund, and an assortment of others. And Trevor Potter was also, along with Lawrence Lessig, one of the writers of a piece of legislation called the American Anti-Corruption Act. Plus, we've identified approximately 93 different organizations at a national level that are working to overturn Citizens United itself, or looking for campaign finance reform that could be enacted in Congress. And then we've looked at legislators. There are quite a few people in the House of Representatives and in Senate who actually believe this is a serious problem and want to change it. So we're creating a facilitation where we get these people together, because there is no national gathering. There has been no national gathering, and there's no national unity on this issue. And without some sort of unity, we're really, really, really not going to be able to go forward. Presently, there's 11 different constitutional amendments proposed to the two houses of Congress. They won't get out of committee because the leadership in the House right now is very much against that. So they just don't let it surface. We need to put more political pressure on our representatives to say the system is broken. It needs an intervention. There are a lot of great people in Congress. It's not all about a bunch of thieves. They're all not a bunch of corrupt people. There are actually some really genuinely good, smart people who really want to do public service work. But when you get into Congress, unfortunately, you're swimming upstream, and you can only swim so long before you get tired, and the next thing you know, you're floating downstream with the rest of them. So the things that you can do.
How about some contact information, Bill?
We're at www.citizenscongress2014.org, and that will tell you all about us. There's a short video that talks about the problem. You can donate on that website. You can actually get involved by contacting your representatives in your area. Tell them to come to the Congress, which is June 2nd to the 5th, San Luis Obispo, California. And you can ask your representative, if they can't be there, to have the legislative director be there. You can ask them to meet me in Washington. You can talk to your local media, try to get them to get on the board and talk about disclosure issues. If candidates had a higher ethical bar, that would be part of the solution, just to disclose all of their donors so people have a real understanding of who's promoting their candidacy. If they could get their media to try to be more investigative in terms of when issues, whether they're state initiatives or propositions or whatever, to expose who it is that's behind that. Even your local stations, you can say that we really want to know who's behind these things. You can't just hide this from us. If you have a group that wants us to come and speak to you, you can do that. If you send us money, that helps us defray the expenses of renting the facilities for us to bring all these people in. And in some cases, it actually helps us with the legislators themselves. Because the first thing that Congress does whenever they want to show the public that they're interested in debt reduction or deficit and all that kind of stuff, they cut their own budget, which is counterproductive. Because the reality is the Chamber of Commerce and special interests don't cut their budgets. They think, great, that's a good time for us to come in because we can overwhelm them. We can actually write their legislation for them, and then they can kind of look at it and go, yeah, okay, that makes sense. And then next thing you know, it becomes part of law. The reason that we're in this situation is because we've become apathetic. Reagan said government is the problem. And the reality is that we've forgotten that it is of the people, for the people, and by the people. We've taken ourselves out of that equation. When you go to Washington, for example, there's a four-story building on the edge of the Capitol Mall housing the Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber of Commerce has a whole floor just of attorneys. Then you have the financial district. They contribute huge sums of money to these campaigns. And a case in point, H.R. 922 is a bill that came before Congress last year. It was introduced in March, bipartisan sponsorship. It was voted on, I think, on October 30th. And what that bill had to do was to roll back a component of the Dodd-Frank financial regulations bill that passed, I think it was 2009. Now, that Dodd-Frank regulations bill was the biggest piece of financial regulation that this country has seen since the Great Depression, since the Glass-Steagall Act. And in fact, when the financial industry understood that this was going to be a priority in the Obama administration, but it actually started in 2007 when they saw the housing bubble was there, and they started going, wait a second, there's a bunch of risky investments here. We could be in trouble. So even before Obama was in office, Representative Frank and Senator Dodd, they started putting this bill together. The banking industry hired 3,000 lobbyists to come in and try to kill this bill or to water it down. That's nearly six lobbyists for every representative in the two houses of Congress. And what they basically did in this bill in H.R. 922 was they tried to roll back a component of the bill that allowed the banks to risk more of their depositors' money. This was one of the big issues in the Great Recession of 2008, where they had risked people's money. The government had to come in and bail them out. What the government had basically said was, hey, look, we don't mind you taking risks. That's capitalism. What we don't want is for you to be risking other people's money where you don't have that much skin in the game. So if you lose, hey, no big deal. We're too big to fail. We'll bail you out. We want you to put skin in the game so that if you're going to fail by making a risky investment, you go down, you suffer the consequences, not the American taxpayer. Well, guess what? In H.R. 922, the banks, Citigroup specifically, wrote 70 out of the 85 lines of that bill to roll that back. It had bipartisan support, and it went to a vote in the House of Representatives on October 30th. Now, nobody in America was asking for that. We have infrastructure issues, the issues of nuclear arms in Iran, the Syrian war. We had the farm bill that was still being debated at that time, et cetera, you name it. All of these bills and all of these issues are things that were before the American public that people go, hey, we want answers to this. You guys should be figuring this out. And they're taking time out of Congress at that point to vote on a bill that was not only written by Citigroup, but when it went back to committee for revisions, Citigroup actually reviewed the revisions, and you can see copies online of what Citigroup wrote in the final bill, and you can see how exactly it measures. And then they voted on that knowing that the Treasury Department said this is a bad bill and doesn't make sense, that the Senate would never vote on it because it was a different political party running the Senate, and the Obama administration says that we'll veto that. But still, these guys went ahead and did that. Why? Well, because those guys got large contributions to their campaigns from the financial industry. And none of them were necessarily representing the small district of Manhattan. And that's exactly what people don't see. So out of all the information and all the issues that are out there that Congress has to deal with, campaign finance, because they're looking for money to continue to go to the reelection campaign. One thing that people don't realize, by the way, is that when you go to Congress, your sort of induction in Congress, you're supposed to watch a PowerPoint video. And what you'll learn is that your day is going to be 8 to 10 hours long, and that 4 hours of every one of your day are going to be spent not in your office doing the work of the people, policy making and studying and so forth. You're going to go across the street to the Democratic, the Republican committee headquarters, and you're going to be dialing for dollars 4 hours a day. And then 1 hour of that day should be spent on some sort of activity that encourages and cultivates that party's agenda, meaning also a fundraiser or something that helps your party at large. So when people stop and think about it, imagine going to your boss and saying, look, I'm coming to work today, but I'm only going to come at noon because the first 4 hours I'm going to wash my car and put new tires on it so I can come to work in the afternoon. That's kind of what happens in Congress right now.
Talking with the director of Citizens Congress 2014, William Ostrander, this is Ideasphere. I'm Guy Rothbun. We'll be right back. Back with Ideasphere, a platform for today's voices, with Director of Citizens Congress William Ostrander. The nonprofit organization is holding their first national gathering of legislators, scholars, and public advocacy groups combating the corrupt influence of money in our political system. We'll have more information on that in a few moments. First, let's talk about the other organizations that are attempting to thwart the Supreme Court decisions. One is Move to Amend. Someone listening who is familiar with Move to Amend might be asking, well, wait a minute, what is the difference between these two organizations and can they team up and actually be more effective as a larger organization?
Well, as I mentioned, there's approximately 93 organizations that are working on this. Move to Amend is one you're using it as an example. And Move to Amend has done a very good job of mobilizing people across the country. And in my opinion, on a bit of an emotional appeal. We have to understand that this is a rule change, not a movement, in my estimation. I mean, to say that it's a movement tends to automatically polarize people in politics. It then becomes a liberal issue or a progressive issue, a Democratic issue, if it has emotion attached to it. And the reality is this affects both Democrats and Republicans. It is a nonpartisan issue, and I think we need to understand this as a rule change, because what the guys are doing out there right now is not illegal in the mainstay. Ethically, it's very challenged, and there are issues of illegalities, but there isn't enough teeth in the FEC to pursue them. So at the end of the day, most people never get caught. So what it comes down to is this is a rule change. It's a nonpartisan rule change, and I like to keep it in those terms.
Okay.
But Move to Amend, for example, has got an amendment that they would like to see passed. I think that it was submitted by Representatives Pocan and Nolan. Those are representatives in Minnesota and Wisconsin, I believe. And in their particular amendment, they would like to see that the power to regulate money in elections is returned to the legislators, therefore sort of trumping the Supreme Court. That would be challenged in court, of course, but nonetheless, yes, that's what their idea is. The other part of their amendment has to do with defining the rights of the Constitution as being exclusive to citizens and not corporations. That one's a much harder sell, but that's what Move to the Men believes in. There are others, and there are 10 other amendments, obviously, and they deal with everything from literally overturning Citizens United to giving power of money back to the legislators to regulate money in elections. So there's slight differences between them. Now, that brings me around to what we're the Citizens Congress is about, which is a facilitation. Because I think the Move to Amend and Common Cause and Public Citizen and Public Campaign and Represent Us and you name it, ad nauseum, the League of Women Voters, Sierra Club, all the people that have a vested interest in the outcome of this, we need those people all to be in the same room to find out where the strengths are and where the support is. For example, using the Move to Amend amendment, I'm not 100% sure that you're going to find a supermajority of people in that room who are going to agree with that. It doesn't mean that it shouldn't be proposed. It doesn't mean that shouldn't be a goal. And I'm not saying that they're wrong or right about it, because maybe they are right. But we need to find out. We need to find out if Common Cause, for example, if Represent Us, if Move to Amend, can all play together in a sandbox and create a national strategy. That doesn't mean there's going to be one approach. It's most likely going to be a plural approach. It's going to be many different ways we have to look at the issue. But we need to get them together in a room to make sure that we're supporting one another in our quest, which is to create a national strategy and reform, you know, how this works.
And getting together in that room is scheduled for the first week of June.
It is, June 2nd through the 5th. June 2nd is a Monday. There's a sort of meet and greet on Monday night. But the point of it is during the day that day, it would be a lot of travel from people from the East Coast. The real work will be starting on the 2nd. We're going to do a live streaming of the event that we hope to have available to people. If they would like to check our website, www.citizenscongress2014.org, you can go to the website, you can sign on. It's going to be kind of a pay-per-view, I'm sorry, but it does have a cost to us, so we need to pass that on. We're a nonprofit, so we make no money off of any of this. But the $50 for putting it online will enable people to actually watch some of the proceedings, and we're going to have a web moderator who will be able to listen to people's suggestions that come in, and we hope to incorporate those into our discussions. Then there are people that we've invited all across the country. We try to do our best to get everybody invited who is a very knowledgeable source about this. Unfortunately, it's not necessarily meant for the average citizen to come as sort of a convention and a rah-rah-rah. It's not meant to be that.
Right.
It's really meant to be a focus group of people that are very comprehensively knowledgeable about the subject so that we can actually create these national strategies.
You're just a month away from your first national gathering, but you just returned from a congressional meeting with members of the House. What was the purpose of that meeting?
Right now, people don't have enough of an idea about what it is. Moreover, we don't have a singular or identified goal. Because if you have 11 different amendments proposed, clearly there's not enough unity or agreement or enough momentum behind any one of them in order for it to get someplace. And so that's the whole point of the facilitation of a national strategy, is that if it were possible, and I said before, there's going to be a plural approach, but if we could somehow craft a single amendment that we felt did everything that we're trying to do, and if everybody could have buy-in on that, and when I say everybody, we've got to talk about a critical mass.
Yes.
Then we feel like at that point you could put pressure on so it's politically disadvantageous to be against it. We could start making some headway. We could start making traction. But right now, I know that even within the House of Congress itself, many of them don't know whether legislation is the right method or an amendment is the right method. They don't know where to put their own efforts. We have to help them to solve that. We have to help show them the light.
Let's wrap it up with more information you have on the meeting in June, how people can become involved and attend.
The Citizens Congress will be held in San Luis Obispo, California from June 2nd to the 5th. It costs $750, and that covers your hotel cost and all the costs associated, other than food and transportation to the event. We are assembling a large compendium, which basically covers a national overview of where campaign finance reform sits. So when people sign up, they will give us our address, and we'll either send them a flash drive or a printed copy of this booklet that they'll be able to have. So everybody will be able to start from a point of zero. And then the Congress will take place over these 3 days. We'll cover topics from legislation versus an amendment to messaging to litmus tests for candidates to rules the IRS, FEC, and SEC can invoke. That'll be on our website. You can go back there and check that agenda. If you have a relative, family member, or friend that lives in San Luis Obispo and you don't need to stay at the facilities that we're providing, you can sign up for $250 and attend the Congress. If you would like to do it live stream on the computer, we'll have the address for the website on our website. And then they'll be able to go to that, and there'll be a cost of about $50 for sort of a pay-per-view. Then we'll have a place where people can type in their comments that will go towards a suggestion box that we hopefully will be reviewing throughout the day to see if other people have ideas that could be brought into the discussion.
In your long-term goal in strategizing this, looking at the monetary amount as well as the numbers, in your long-range goal, would it take 3 or 4 million? How many people would it require to actually get that critical mass underway?
We have put this together so far because we're all volunteers and we've gotten a lot of people to donate and we're a nonprofit. We're actually registered as a 527 nonprofit. We have put this together at this point for about $5,000. And to me, the only reason to crow about that is because too many people feel like there's nothing they can do. It's not true. You can stand up and you can do something. More than just writing a letter to the editor, you can actually create this. I mean, the whole idea of democracy is that the people have the power. I don't say that in some sort of like 1960s drug-induced flower power thing. I just literally mean the founding fathers thought that if the people were having a problem getting legislation passed through their typical channels of the legislators, they could create conventions, state conventions and national conventions that could change things. Well, we're not doing a true state convention, but what we're doing is creating a place where we're collectively gathering information and intelligence that we are going to help to try to lead the strategy on this because there's not enough leadership going on in Washington. We can do this for a very small amount of money. Now, to build the Congress itself, the renting the facilities, all that does cost a fair amount of money. And your contributions of $100, $50, whatever you can afford, are much needed and grateful. In terms of this long-term strategy, our strategy is to help continue to put out litmus tests so that people understand where their candidates and politicians in their areas stand on this issue. And that doesn't take a huge amount of money. We don't feel like we need to do a redundancy of infrastructure that many of the national organizations have. We look at ourselves as being a facilitator for many of the national organizations that are already in existence so that people aren't duplicating the valuable donation that they've sending off to somebody. We're trying to help maximize that and make it efficient.
Well, Bill Ostrander, I appreciate your time, your effort you're putting into this, and once again, wishing you well.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Please come see us at www.citizenscongress2014.org and help us make this happen.
Great. Will do.
Thanks.
William Ostrander is the director of Citizens Congress 2014, a group striving to remove the corrupting influence of money in the political system. Check out their website at citizencongress2014.org. If you have any comments or questions, write to me at rathbunproductions@gmail.com. This program is a distribution of Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org. For Ideasphere, I'm Guy Rathbun.